Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to episode 51 of Master English with Tim, the podcast where Tim helps you to master English. I'm Tim, native speaker English teacher from the U.S., polyglot, world traveler, and author of several dictionaries for people learning English. I also have, for the past 51 weeks, been a podcaster, and I encourage you, if you're a new listener, to explore my older episodes on my website, EnglishWithTim.com, or on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. In this week's episode, I am going to talk about collocations. Collocations are words that are often used together. Some collocations are very common and ordinary. For example, hot weather, or fast car, or spicy food. We call these combinations of words collocations because the words are co-located. They are located together and used together. When you are able to quickly and automatically use collocations, it helps you to speak more fluently and in a way that sounds more natural and less forced. The examples of collocations I gave you a moment ago are common, so common in fact that most people will just learn them automatically, without any particular effort. Some other collocations, however, are more specific and difficult and require effort to learn. If you can learn and then use these specific collocations, you will be able to speak English in a way that allows you to express very specific ideas and shows your mastery of the language. The first collocation we'll deal with today is commit something to memory. When you commit something to memory, you do something that makes you remember it for a long time. When you commit something to memory, you don't just memorize it, you memorize it so well that it stays with you for a long time, maybe even for the rest of your life. For example, when I was in the third grade at school, in our math classes, we had to learn multiplication. 2 times 3 is 6, 6 times 4 is 24, 9 times 9 is 81, and so on. We had to learn these math facts really well without forgetting them. We had to commit them to memory because we were going to use these math facts for years afterwards in our future math classes. We needed to know them well and be able to remember them quickly without thinking. My mom helped me to commit the multiplication facts to memory. We had little paper cards, each with a math problem on the front, for example, 7 times 2, and on the back there was the answer, in this case, 14. And we practiced with those cards every day until I could answer all of them quickly. But practicing with those cards was just the start of committing the math facts to memory. What helped me commit them to memory was using the math facts every day at school for years afterwards. Now, you might think it sounds a bit strange to say commit something to memory. Why commit? Well, think of some of the other meanings of commit. If you are in a committed relationship, that means that you are in a relationship only with one person. You will do nothing romantic with any other people. In other words, it's a committed relationship is serious and it's probably for a long time. And when a person commits a crime, for example, a person commits murder, the person changes forever. Afterwards, that person is a murderer and always will be. So again, commit is about something serious and permanent. If you want to commit today's collocations to memory, then I don't suggest using flashcards like I did in math classes. Instead, listen closely to the rest of the episode and do the exercises in the PDF, which I will include later, and try to use the collocations in your own life. The next collocation is fasten your seatbelt. The word fasten is spelled F-A-S-T-E-N. The letter T in fasten is silent, kind of like in the word listen. When you fasten your seatbelt, you connect it to the seat of the car or plane that you're in so that you are safely seated. People who have fastened their seatbelt and get into an accident have a much lower chance of being seriously hurt or even dying than people who don't fasten their seatbelt. So my advice to you today is fasten your seatbelt, please. Well, okay, I'm not sure if fastening your seatbelt will make much of a difference if you're on an airplane, but if you're a driver or a passenger in a car, do fasten, please, that seatbelt. Since we are talking about driving, let me add another collocation, which is to hit the brakes. The brakes are the part of a car or truck or motorcycle or bicycle that makes it move slower and then stop. So which verb do you use with brakes? You can just say use the brakes, but it's more colorful and descriptive and specific to say hit the brakes. When you hit the brakes, you push on or pull them suddenly and hard so that you can reduce your speed quickly. You might hit the brakes because the traffic light turned red and you don't want to drive through a red light. You might hit the brakes because a dog ran out in front of your car and you don't want to kill it. You might also hit the brakes because the person in front of you hit the brakes and you don't want to drive into the back of their car. And finally, if you see a police car on the side of the road that is checking everyone's speed, you probably will need to hit the brakes so the police don't stop you. The next collocation uses the verb drive, but has nothing to do with cars or trucks or even travel. Another meaning of drive, which you may not know, is to push an object with great force or violence so that it enters another object. For example, a person who is very angry can drive their fist into a wall. If you drive your fist into a wall, it means that you punch the wall, you hit the wall with your hand so hard that your hand makes a hole in the wall. Or a person who is working in their house can use a hammer to drive a nail, which is a long, thin, sharp, cylindrical piece of metal, into a wall. When someone drives a nail into a wall, it sounds a little bit like this. So, we have a few collocations also that we use with this meaning of drive, of pushing something or pushing someone. The first one is to drive someone crazy. When you drive someone crazy, you make a person crazy by continually doing really annoying things. You can drive a person crazy by constantly asking them lots of questions about unimportant things. You can drive someone crazy by calling them on the telephone all the time. You can drive your romantic partner crazy by never washing the dishes or doing the laundry. The idea here with using the verb drive is that you are pushing the person to go crazy. Another way to say drive someone crazy is to drive someone nuts. In U.S. English, nuts, like the same word as food, also means crazy. So drive someone nuts means the same as drive someone crazy. You can express a very similar meaning with drive someone up the wall. The idea here is that you annoy a person so much and so many times that they feel they cannot run away from you and try to escape by climbing the wall. One thing that might drive you up the wall are really annoying pop music with a melody that always repeats in your head. Another thing that might drive you up the wall is when people at work steal your food from the refrigerator. The final collocation with this meaning of drive is to drive someone to drink. This is again similar to drive someone crazy or drive someone nuts or drive someone up the wall, but it is worse and deeper. When you drive someone to drink, you make the person feel so crazy and hopeless that they become an alcoholic because of the stress that you cause them. Of course, becoming an alcoholic because of the stress someone else is causing you is a really extreme reaction. So when we use this expression, it is not usually completely serious. Still, one thing that might drive someone to drink is, for example, if someone works really hard in order to earn enough money for their child to go to a really expensive private school, and then that kid never studies, parties all the time, gets terrible grades, and learns nothing. So that situation really could drive someone to drink. The next collocation is lighten someone's load. In this case, someone's load is not a heavy physical object that the person is carrying, but instead the serious problems a person has in their life and the stress that those problems cause. When you lighten someone's load, you do something to reduce that person's stress. So lightening someone's load is kind of like the opposite of driving someone crazy. Imagine that you have a friend who has a family with three kids, but also that his mother is very sick. So you can lighten your friend's load, for example, by cooking dinners for him and for his family and bringing him food. You could also lighten his load by paying a babysitter to take care of his kids and then inviting him to go to dinner or a park so he can forget about his problems for a while. And of course, the easiest way to lighten someone's load is to just listen to them talk. The next collocation is next to never. Next to never is just a more interesting way to say almost never. What are some things I do personally next to never? Well, I go to the cinema to see a movie next to never. In fact, I watch movies pretty rarely anyways, but I go to the cinema even more rarely, maybe once every couple of years. So yes, I go to the cinema next to never. Another thing I do next to never is smoke. I am currently 43 years old, and until I was 30, I never even tried tobacco. But when I was 30, I was at a bar with friends and family, and someone had a water pipe, also called a hookah, with flavored tobacco, and I smoked it. In fact, I didn't even know that I was smoking tobacco. Actually, I got rather sick afterwards. I had not slept very well, and I'd smoked and, traveled on a bus with a lot of people I didn't know, and I got quite sick. Anyway, the next time I smoked was about 6 months later when my brother, who also basically never smokes, smokes next to never, gave me a clove cigarette. Clove cigarettes are those brown cigarettes that smell better than ordinary cigarettes. I don't know why I said yes, but I smoked it, and that was the second and last time that I smoked tobacco. So again, you could say that I have smoked tobacco next to never. And again, for anybody who's listening, especially younger people, if you're smoking for the first time, don't think that it's going to be something that you're just going to try and never try again. I was lucky that I didn't find it so interesting and stimulating that I continued to do it and then became addicted to it. I was lucky to smoke next to never and, never do it again, actually. Anyway, the next collocation is definitive account. In this case, account is not what you have at a bank, but instead someone's description of a dramatic or interesting event and how that event happened, and which may or may not be 100% true. For example, if a criminal robs a bank and people saw this robbery happen, the police would try to talk to as many people who saw the robbery as possible, and each of the people that the police talked to would have their own account of that bank robbery. And at the same time, you don't need to be at an event to have or write an account of it. The detective who writes the final report about the robbery, which includes information from all of the different people who saw it happen, and from the bank's security camera, well, that report is also an account. An account could also be written about a much larger event that continued for years and involved hundreds, thousands, or even many millions of people. There's an entire profession that does nothing but write accounts of large events. That job is, of course, historian. So, now that you have an idea of what an account is, what is a definitive account? A definitive account is an account that is so good that people in the future who want to know about this event will read the definitive account first. A definitive account is so good and so complete that probably no one needs to write another account again. An example of a book which is a definitive account is The Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. If you want to know about the evolution of plants and animals, then that is the best book to read. The next collocation is fast asleep. Let's first talk about what this expression does not mean. Fast asleep does not mean that a person fell asleep quickly. Instead, when a person is fast asleep, it means that the person is so deeply asleep that it would take great effort to wake them up. So if you're fast asleep and the telephone rings, or your alarm goes off at 6:30 on Monday morning, you will continue sleeping as if nothing had happened. Why do we say fast asleep? Well, think back to fasten your seatbelt from the beginning of this episode. Recall that when you fasten your seatbelt, you connect it to the seat of the car or plane that you're in so that you're securely seated and can't move easily. Recall also that the word fasten is spelled with a T. It's F-A-S-T-E-N. If you take away the last two letters, you will have the word fast, which in the case of fastening your seatbelt means tight or secure. Similarly, when you're fast asleep, you again are securely or deeply asleep, so that only really loud noises or bright lights can wake you up. One interesting detail about fast is that I'm not 100% sure on this, but my intuition tells me that it is connected with the German word fest. Fest also means like secure. So if you're seated in German, if you're seated fest, that means that you're seated in a way that does not allow you to move. Also in German, a Festung is a castle, and a castle is a very secure or safe place. It's not going to move. No one's going to enter it. So probably it's connected. And another way to say fast asleep is sound asleep. Sound asleep really means the same thing. It means very deeply asleep so that it's difficult to wake a person up. Honestly, I don't know why we say sound asleep. Not quite sure on that. Probably that's a subject for me to investigate and tell you about some other time. It's now pretty late as I am recording the last part of this episode, and hopefully I will soon be sound asleep or fast asleep myself. Before I go, I just want to thank you for listening and say that I hope this episode has helped you to commit some useful collocations to memory. Until next time.